it's time to go out and...
From that famous nightclub at the end of the world, called the Lifeboat Hour, that's where we are tonight on Sunday, March 11, 2012. Yeah, everybody's just losing it all over the place. And I got some amazing feedback from you guys last week. That you really liked the format when I just kind of sat back and did a stream of consciousness thing. I never envisioned myself as ever being qualified yet for the old man on the rocker looking back. But as I look at the situation in the world tonight, all around, it's kind of like one of those scenes in a movie where everybody is gathered together in the waiting room of a hospital where the star of the movie is dying. And you just start talking, because what you do at times like that while you're waiting is you just be with each other. And maybe that's kind of what I want to do tonight. I just want to be with you guys. But if you thought I was angry last week, well, let's start off. In Afghanistan, stories broke this morning. We're keeping you constantly updated on the World News Desk at CollapseNet. That a U.S. soldier went out last night, loaded up, and killed 19 people. Well, that's kind of a weak-ass story as I sit here looking at Dick Marcinko's picture with his little twinkle in his eye. Lone soldier, my ass. But there have been multiple reports from Reuters, which is still holding to a theme that there was more than one shooter. But the U.S. government is jumping all over the fact that, and making statements that it was one shooter, a staff sergeant, age 36, from, I think, Washington, which would mean Fort Lewis, I guess, went out and killed these people. Now, in the context of what's going on here, if it was a group of soldiers, and I'm guessing it was a squad, that would be an eight-man squad, what we have now is only for old, those of us who are old enough to remember, is another My Lai massacre. Now, this could not possibly come at a worse time for the United States, given the fact that it is being thoroughly humiliated, defeated, and pushed back on all fronts, economic, political. Iran has the upper hand with peak oil. The attack on Iran is off the, the U.S. is just being trounced left and right. But given the burning of the Qurans in Afghanistan now, I guess, what, 3 weeks ago, and the rage that has provoked, the Afghan people have snapped. They have had enough. And I have no idea how bad this is going to be, but I could easily see very, very bad things for the ISAF forces in Afghanistan. This war needs to end now. These men and women need to be brought home now. Their lives are in danger. And what they're doing is useless and futile, and it's in pursuit of the wrong objectives. And the sad part is that most of them know it. For everybody's sake, just leave Afghanistan now. Now, in a broader political context, I had been commenting over the last couple of weeks how we're seeing all kinds of new energy and other kinds of treaties and agreements being signed between Afghanistan, Pakistan, and Iran. Iran is going to start supplying natural gas to Pakistan and to Afghanistan. So there's a little regional alliance forming together, and it is clear that it is almost open season on U.S. personnel. I said that after two U.S. officers were shot dead, assassinated by an Afghan military person in the Interior Ministry about 2 weeks ago. But let's just seems to be the dominant theme. And, I'm not the only one who really has just about had enough, and we can all feel that point rising. My good buddy Joe Rogan's got a movie coming out. I have to get the I'll look up the title of it. I just watched the trailer. It's going to be awesome. It'll be on must-see videos at Collapse, and that may already be there. But I can hear it in Joe. I can hear it in all the people that I talk to that this is just enough. Now, what does enough mean? Well, this week we put up on CollapseNet on the yellow bar, which is where I kind of rotate really important things that I want to stay for a while because they carry big messages that I want to sink in. We put up a thing to what I call, and it is the most important movie ever made and the most important movie that ever will be made. It's called Into Eternity. It's about a place called Onkalo, O-N-K-L-O, in Finland. And it is stylishly much like Collapse, my movie was. And it leaves you, it hits you with that same power. But Onkalo is a place that the Finnish people, in their maturity and their wisdom, have decided themselves in honor to be obligated to construct. And it is a facility to hold all of the nuclear waste generated in Finland for 100,000 years, which is how long it remains deadly to everything. And it's going to take more than 100 years to build a facility secure enough to house this, but they ask the most amazing questions in the movie. You know, gee, the 100,000 years is like 20, is like five times longer than all of human civilization has been around. The pyramids have only been around 5,000 years, and they didn't stay sealed. And how do you warn people? How do you, all of the deep questions? And this film just does this so elegantly. And you realize what a daunting challenge it is to remove the trash, the poison, the selfishness of human industrial civilization just as a matter of trying to be polite for those who will follow. And then at the end you realize that this one facility is only to house the nuclear waste made in Finland. The U.S. has abandoned Yucca Flats. We, of course, the Japanese, oh, this is a bad joke, have a new and novel solution for storage of nuclear waste. They just scatter it around the landscape. Japan is has been detected with, I mean, deadly levels of contamination from the north. It is almost all on the east side of the island. The west side is doing pretty well, but the north almost to Hokkaido and south all the way down to Okinawa, they're turning up cesium and plutonium in the soil and the food. That's not the way we want to store nuclear waste. Now, as I watched this movie, I was aware that twice in the history of this planet, but there was one extinction in particular, and historians or geologists can correct me, it might have been the Cambrian extinction. I think it was about 2.5 billion years ago when everything on the surface of the planet died. There was nothing living anywhere. Life came back from microorganisms buried, 5, 6, 10, 20 feet below the seabed underwater and evolved up to where we are now. Haven't we done well for ourselves? But it gives you an amazing perspective when you realize that we have already, if not with nuclear poisoning, with climate change, doomed all life on this planet. And it takes maturity to even hold that concept in your head for long enough to think about it. I really recommend everybody go watch Into Eternity. It's an awesome, awesome movie, and it will give you perspective, which is something we all need right now. And this is where I fall back on a line from Anthony DeMello that when you get to a certain point, you either go stark raving crazy or become a mystic. We have an 800-pound gorilla in Greece. Greece is deep. No, it hasn't. Yes, it has. No, it hasn't. Yes, it has. Oh, lying sons of bitches. Greece has defaulted. Credit default swaps have been triggered. The media is now so absolutely schizophrenic that you see contradictory stories appearing in major publications within 10, 20 minutes of each other. They have no idea what to say and even less idea what to do. and there's a new 800-pound gorilla surfacing in what Greeks recognize are called unfunded liabilities, and that's the anchor that nobody just saw fit to acknowledge, and pretending it doesn't be there doesn't work, and especially as it doesn't work for the United States, which is on a $5 trillion of unfunded liability. Don't count Social Security, don't count Medicare. This is all just, and it's all now the anything that's official out there is just offensive, just totally offensive right now. And I think everybody's just about had enough. And I just hope that everybody just doesn't go berserk all at once. I had a good Facebook thread going today about what's happening with severe drug shortages around the world as life-saving drugs and drugs that really ease the suffering of terminal patients are in amazingly short supply. But also, was it Haldane or a medicine for schizophrenia is in short, is in extremely short supply, so they aren't giving schizophrenics their great. I'm not sure I want to be walking around a major city when all that happens, but also when 2-4 million people all go off Prozac at the same time, you know, all those. So there's also been a strong theme this week, too, that's been surfacing about 9/11, about September 11th. And maybe I'm going to talk more about that. But, you know, enough is enough. There, too. And it's been pretty clear now that a lot of the people who diverted, detoured, sidetracked, hijacked the 9/11 movement are now just, you know, pretty much standing exposed as being incompetent, inept, and otherwise. And I said this last week, and I'm going to say it again, but I say this tonight in recognition, and we have shown you this at CollapseNet, that world leaders around the world are heads of state, that big people read CollapseNet. And they read what we do. Press TV almost wrote a story based on something I had written 24 hours earlier. So for all you guys, if the world wants to raise September 11th, forget the American 9/11 truth movement, which is useless. And it was. That's why I left it in 2004. But if the world wants to resurrect this, and I know that people like Hugo Chavez know, and I know that my book's been read in many, many, many countries, if you want to bring up 9/11 to stop this out-of-control criminal regime in the United States, you have everything that you need in your lap. And there's also been some discussion this week from people who I call poseurs and dilettantes, you know, who want to claim credit for a lot of the research on 9/11 or who seem to believe that I need their approval. For those of you who have read my book, Crossing the Rubicon, it is an accurate historical record of who did what for about the first 3.5 years after 9/11, or 2.5 years after 9/11. And if you're not in that book, because I gave everybody credit for everything they did, that's what an honest historian and journalist does. And if you don't find that whoever you're calling an expert on 9/11 in Rubicon, just forget about them. If the world chooses to challenge the U.S. on 9/11, all you got to do is pick up Crossing the Rubicon. The whole case is there in your lap. You don't need me for it. You don't even need to mention my name. But I think the world's just about had enough of the United States of America, and I know I have too. This is not the America I was born into, and not that that was perfect by any stretch of the imagination, but the United States of America does not exist anymore. It has no constitution. Its chief executive is the highest paid lobbyist for the fracking industry and the war industry. We have no civil rights. We have no credibility in our government, and we are killing people around the world. And as a human being, I will say I cannot and I do not condone the massacre of innocent civilians, and I reject the violence done by my country around the world, and I think there's a lot of real, sane, sober, clear-headed Americans that feel exactly the same way. And there's also another very clear message emerging. You know, Occupy seems to be stalling out a little bit. I am obligated to, you know, tell the truth as I see it. I'm a cheerleader, but I don't see a lot of momentum there, and I hear a lot of talk about the same problems that have always plagued progressives. Is the world is burning down outside. There is no constitution. We're killing ourselves, and people think it's too strenuous to call maybe for a general strike. I'm sorry, but whatever you committees are doing in Occupy now, you're all a bunch of pussies. Take a look at the world around. The last hopes that we have had, and I have never said they were guaranteed to save the world, were Occupy and Ron Paul. And Ron Paul's done well, but, Santorum, and this is dragging out. And I think Ron Paul's maybe fourth or fifth, and he's got some delegates. But, history may not decide to wait for Occupy. It may not decide to wait for Ron Paul. And that's something I've held close in my pocket for a long time. I didn't get, I'm a dedicated occupier, but Occupy ain't what it used to be. And we're flat out of time. So I got a lot more to talk about. I'm just going to share a lot of stuff with you, maybe go back and tell some of the stories that people like me to tell about some of the places I've been and things I've done, some of the insights that this old fart can offer you. I am old, but by no means feeble. We have a really special song tonight. Last night I started a little theme about grieving for the places I won't get to see anymore. Considering that we had stories that seven more airlines are about to file for bankruptcy on the World News Desk at CollapseNet this week, it's pretty clear that travel's pretty much gone, and I certainly don't want to fly. But places that I will miss, grieving over the places that I won't get to go back to. Visitado México muchas veces. Visitado Tijuana, Ensenada, La Paz, Cancun, Iztapa, Mexico City, Nuevo Laredo, and I've been there many times, and I've been to the Dominican Republic, and I've been to Venezuela, of course, but me gusto México, and pobre México. Basta la prohibición. Basta la prohibición. So there's a great song that will always remind me about so many of the things I like about being down south in Latin America. But this is a very special song. It comes out of the Venice Arts Club, which is my home petri dish. That was Doug Lewis and all my friends in Venice. And you will find some links to me on the Venice Arts Club page. Just Google it, you'll find it. But this song is called Tide Goes In, Tide Goes Out, and it's sung by Kristen Weigart, who I sang with on New White Trash. She was a bandmate. And Doug Lewis played the guitar and wrote the song, and it was recorded at our friend Arthur Barrow's Low Tech Studios in Mar Vista, California, Arthur being the former bass player for Frank Zappa. But here's, just sit back and think of having a shot, and the sun's out, and you're under a palm tree. Let's hear a song. We'll come back and try to deal with the rest of the world.
He was tired of the living, tired of the dread, tired of the race. All his friends were strangers. He'd taken to wearing the stranger's face. Tide goes in, tide goes out. What goes around comes about in a most peculiar way. Somebody, but talk sometime if you don't mind. Tide goes in, tide goes out. What comes around comes about in the most peculiar way.
Vigard of the Venice Arts Club. Uh-oh. I didn't. Did I? Did I cut off the song? I don't know. Yes, I don't think so. Doesn't make any difference. It's live radio. It's also the time in human experience when the only way to stay sane is to let go of everything. I'm going to take a couple minutes to talk about that before we go to break. Let go. With all due respect to the traditions of 12-step programs, that's kind of a point in history where I don't think it's a big offense if I reveal that I was in Alcoholics Anonymous for 21 years, 1 month, and 13 days. I didn't do anything. No drugs, no alcohol, no nothing, no marijuana, nothing. And I worked those 12 steps diligently, and I found a great deal of spiritual power. And there's been a whole lot of AA bumper sticker sayings that have been coming back into my head all week that really apply to the human race now. One of the most important things that you learn in AA is that any alcoholic, before he gets sober, has to hit a bottom. A bottom meaning a state of absolute hopelessness and despair, where he or she is fresh out of answers. And that is exactly where the human race is right now, because nothing is going to be improved, fixed, or anything else until the human race hits a bottom and becomes teachable. That's the way we used to look at newcomers, you know. You took the ones who were teachable right under your arm, and you took the ones who weren't and loved them, but you let them go too, who weren't. But there's a line in the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous that says when you're talking to a newcomer, stress on the newcomer that the more hopeless he feels, the better. Now, in times like this, that's kind of a hard one to get your head around, isn't it? But it is the truth of spiritual power. That it is only when one reaches a point of absolute hopelessness and despair that a different level, that a different consciousness can successfully penetrate. And we absolutely need to hit a bottom. And I guess I have looked at my task too as raising the bottom for the human race, trying to raise the bottom as a matter, you know, by virtue of making my fellows aware of what all in the peak oil movement worked so hard and sacrificed so much to talk about, and those of us who broke 9/11 paid in terms of prices to keep an uncontaminated, unpolluted record of what happened, and that record is in crossing the Rubicon. But I feel that bottom approaching. There is a strong sense in the air. There's a strong, everybody I'm talking to says enough already. When we come back after the break here in just a minute, I'm going to talk about Russell Means and some of the things that I've learned from my exposure to Native American teachings. I'm going to talk about Muhammad Ali, going to talk about fracking. But we're going to come to the conclusion at the end of this show tonight that the only thing left to do with this system is to tear it down, and nothing else will do. We'll be back right after this. New White Trash, It Would Be Strange, one of the 37 originals we did. You can find us at newwhitetrash.com. Incredible wah-wah guitar on that was played by our good friend Michael Yost. It occurs to me, I don't know if Michael listens anymore, Michael's just a wonderful guitar player. He's German, he lives in Venice, he has black fingernails, and he's always in trouble. And God, is he good. And great friend, we love him to pieces. And I've never played Michael on this show, and the reason why it occurred to me is that I put Michael Yost's classical guitar on every night as I read the news links and try to wade through the world of weirdness that's out there. But anyway, that's a New White Trash, It Would Be Strange. So, okay, here we are. Let's go on this little walk down the lane here. I will never forget when I first saw Malcolm X talking. And the thing about Malcolm X when he spoke was that he was so clear, and he was so focused, and he was so noble. He was so obviously straight and correct with every point that he made. It was almost like you were having a conversation with someone for the first time. And I feel much the same way about one of the co-founders of the American Indian Movement, Russell Means. He speaks with such utter clarity and correctness in a world that is so full of garbage now that he's probably the only person in the world I'd like to meet. Him and Muhammad Ali, my other hero. But Russell Means talks about the Native American experience statistics and detail that will break your heart. He does a Malcolm X on your head about what the world has done, and he makes us see clearly that the United States of America treats the whole world, and now most of its own people, as Indians, on reservations, subhumans, non-humans, cattle to be managed. Russell Means is a warrior. You should look him up on Wikipedia if you're not familiar, but he fought back against the FBI at a place called Wounded Knee in 1973. A lot of people were there, including a guy who became my teacher, Skip Mayhawk, who was an elder of the Dakota Sioux. And they fought the FBI to a standstill, but Russell Means fought all up and down Central America, with the Sandinistas. He fought for indigenous people. He has pulled triggers many times. He is a warrior. But he is also just a man of amazing clarity. And he gives me something that I really don't find in too many places. I get frustrated because there's not a lot of people I can talk to who see things as clearly as I do. People like Russell Means are rare people, and it's treats. So I put out the feeler. I would really like to meet him and just talk with him, not for a publicity stunt, not to make a film. I just want some FaceTime with the dude because I need a reality check from a warrior I respect. I've been honored by a great many warriors in my life, and I didn't even realize that I was being honored until like years after it happened. I just, you know, I never thought I was worthy, but I've never spent a ton of time in the company of warriors, and I need an eyeball face-to-face check right now with people that I respect. I'd love to hear from, you know, some of my green beanie friends right now, or my SEALs, or you know, the guys I know from the agency, just somebody who's been out there just to give me a reality check here, because I'm almost at the limits. This week I put up a video of Russell Means, again, on the yellow bar at CollapseNet. Russell Means on America. You have to go watch that. If you think you have guts, go watch that. And open your mind and listen to it. And that was when I decided to reach out. And I have no idea whether I'm going to get a response or not, but that's up to Spirit to decide. And she will decide. You know, I sent out the request, and I said to my staff, we have a telephone conference with all the management at CollapseNet once a week. We were having our staff meeting, and I said, damn it, look, this is time to either kill me or win the war. I either want to die now or get the war over with. And listen to all you limp-lifted, crazy-ass liberals out there, relax. Don't tell me I'm getting depressed. No, there's a time when it's time when you say, look, either kill me or get this over with. And that's the reality I'm kind of wanting to check out there. But I think a lot of us are feeling that same way. So, you know, I said to staff, well, you know, maybe if they kill me, and I broke out this national security law book that I've had since the Contra era. It's a very expensive book, very hard to get, but it has a lot of the case recordings about national security law and COINTELPRO, and reveals some of the absolute darkest, deepest, and everything that Russell Means says about American policy is true, and it's spelled out in spades in national security law. But there's one case that I will never forget, Hobson versus Wilson, U.S. Second Circuit, 1984, I believe it was. This came up after the Church and Pike hearings. Here's some history for you. Disclosed all kinds of CIA dirty dealings. So in this case, it's top secret FBI documents were released saying that the number one priority of the Federal Bureau of Investigation, the number one priority throughout all of civil rights, throughout all of Vietnam, throughout all of the 60s and all of the 70s, number one priority was to prevent an alliance between blacks and whites or across races. And historically speaking, Martin Luther King wasn't killed because he was a civil rights activist. He was killed because he was a black civil rights activist who had suddenly become an anti-war activist and was representing the whites. He was uniting the races. So was Bobby Kennedy, and so was John. And I've had, you know, along my covert travels, or whatever you want to call them, my rendezvous with spooks along the way, I've learned a lot about assassinations and how they work, especially Bobby Kennedy. And there comes a point in a public figure's life where he's too big to assassinate. And that's pretty much where I am now. I made a good movie. crossing the Rubicon's well known. We have GlaxoSmithKline members in 68 countries around the world. So that would cause more trouble than it would, it would solve. But on the other hand, when you get to a level like a Martin Luther King or Bobby or John, you become so big that you cross over another threshold where it has to happen. And I thought, well, shit, if just me sending out an email and the FBI reading it for sure that I'd like to meet Russell Means gets me killed, well, that might win the war. I don't care at this point. And I am just, and I'm pretty fed up now, too, with the fact that the American people are not showing up for their own execution. They're not showing up for their own dismemberment. They're not showing up for, to stand up for all of the criminality that is going on right now that is so utterly out of control and is leading all life on this planet to extinction. Going back to the AA stuff, God, there was some just profound, and I am so grateful for every minute, every second that I spent in AA, and the people that I met there, and the friends that I made. Since I left, two books and the movie, so I'm doing all right. But God, what wisdom! And there's a great line, also in the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous: half measures availed us nothing. In other words, half-measured attempts at change do not avail us 50% results. You can't do this any other way but to do it. And there are so many ways to fight back, and that's what's encouraging. And if you're on CollapseNet, you would be seeing that Anonymous is scoring blows. The court cases against the occupiers have been thrown out. The court cases are being won against fracking. Oh, and fracking, by the way, this is really cool. We just had another story yesterday on the World News Desk at CollapseNet that there was a series of earthquakes in Ohio absolutely confirmed to have been caused by fracking. Now, we have court cases and rulings, clear signs, uncontested, from like seven or eight states in the States, but I think four countries, in France, in Britain, and, it's like fracking causes earthquakes. And yet fracking's highest paid lobbyist sits in the Oval Office. The only thing to do with this system, I'm sorry, I'm a little scattered, but I'm cleaning some stuff out, not 50%. It has to be torn down completely. And any demand less than that now from Occupy or from any place else is futility. Absolute futility. Don't talk to me about Glass-Steagall. Don't talk to me about tear this system down. It is the system that is killing us. And we don't have a lot of time. There are a great many ways to fight. We bring them, everyone we can find to you at CollapseNet. And thank you for your support. We still need donations sent to support independent journalism. We still have the volunteers to take care of. We're swinging hard for you here. And please help keep us going, because our traffic is growing, and we know that some of the most important people in the world are there on CollapseNet every day, and they're also listening to this show tonight. The people running the world are doing a horrible job. And they cannot solve any of these problems because they created them. They don't know how to do anything else. This is really cool. Couple little stories just on this theme that we're on. Well, first of all, I hate this headline. Armed cop sent to reporter's house over quote in story. Well, when have you ever seen a cop that wasn't armed? That's like reporters saying an armored tank. There's no such thing as an unarmored tank. the fact that a cop was sent to a reporter's house over a quote in a story in Oakland. The Oakland PD or mayor or somebody sent a cop to say, can you fix this quote? We have that on the World News Desk. That'll be there. I think that's there now. But here's one that really kind of pushed some PTSD buttons in me. And by the way, you have PTSD. The worst thing you can do with PTSD, for all of you vets out there that are listening, is pretend you don't have it. You know, you got to learn how to make friends with it and respect it. NYPD officer held in psychiatric ward of hospital for 6 days after reporting corruption. This is from the Village Voice, March 11th. In October 2009, Schoolcraft, that's the officer's name, met with NYPD investigators for 3 hours and detailed more than a dozen cases of crime reports being manipulated in the district. 3 weeks after that meeting, which was supposed to have been kept secret from Schoolcraft's superiors, his precinct commander and a deputy chief ordered Schoolcraft to be dragged from his apartment and forced into the Jamaica Hospital psychiatric ward for 6 days. And my comment on the World News Desk was, been there, done that, got the T-shirt. That's what happened to me in 1977. Although the smartest thing that I think that I ever did in my whole life was as the city was coming to drag me away to take me to their shrink because I was complaining about CIA dealing drugs, I had the good sense to go and check myself into a different hospital outside the city's control for 3 weeks, and there a psychiatrist gave me safe haven and wrote an amazing report, said this man is completely 100% sane, he's fit for duty. You know, there's nothing wrong with his mind. He's just seen and dealt with more than any human being should have to. I forestalled the attempt to shut me down as a psycho in 1977. I was returned to full duty without restriction, certified for promotion, and the department was writing me glowing rating reports a year after that. So records are important to keep, but I've been there, I've done that, I've got the T-shirt, and what makes me angry is how many good cops this has had to happen to because nobody listened to good cops like me 30 years ago, or good cops like so many good, like Frank Serpico, who I tip my hat to. I had an email from him once, and if only you knuckleheads had listened, man, if only you knuckleheads had listened to all of us. But, you know, we hope there's still time. I was having a long talk this week with my good friend and assistant, Errol Flora, who I met at Occupy Santa Rosa. She was an amazing light there. And we were outside talking, and we were talking about Onkalo and the radioactive waste and everything that's happening. And all of a sudden, somebody said the word hope, and it's like we both started to cry at the same time. There is reason to hope. The problem is that I can't tell you what for. If, in fact, and I believe that to be true, the mess we have created with 250,000 tons of radioactive waste in the world, which we are now prepared to store permanently none of, we probably have killed all life on this planet, and isn't that a nice legacy for our species? But at the same moment, I am deeply aware that spirit is moving on the land, and spirit is moving in people's hearts. And all we can do is to have faith in that unseen, that whatever it is that keeps us putting one foot in front of the other, and whatever it is that allows these little bright lights to shine in front of us of something good happen, is maybe the best beacon we can find in these really dark times. I don't, you know, I was thinking about this long journey from 1977 until now. the most painful time with me, and there's very few people, even people who have followed me for a long time, would guess this. But in 1992-93, right after Waco, I started to get involved with a bunch of mysterious deaths in the U.S. military, all of which had been classified as suicide. There was Johnny McCaskill, an embassy guard, and there started to be like 42, and I got deeply involved in a case of which where Colonel Jim Sabo, an 06 who was chief of air ops at El Toro Marine Air, had been suicided after he had caught CIA C-130s flying 2,000 and 3,000 kilos of cocaine at a time onto his base. That's the same stuff. Well, they suicided him. They tried to make it look like he killed himself with a shotgun when the autopsy showed it was abundantly clear that he had aspirated blood while unconscious. Now, if you're dead and your brain's blown out, so he was knocked out first and then somebody... So I got involved with these cases, and I got involved with a group of military families that became Until We Have Answers. And there were a great many. There came to be 109 cases before the families gave up. And I sat with maybe 16 different families and heard the story and went through the autopsy photos. I'd been a detective of each case, and I incorporated all of that into my psyche. And most of these guys were murdered because they had been involved in covert operations where there was something really, really dirty, or they showed a conscience. There was a guy in the Navy who had supposedly hung himself from the cord of a payphone on a ship while masturbating in a hallway. What? Really offensive. And the pain of the families was really hard to deal with because I was like the only person sane enough, like a Russell Means or a Malcolm X, to sit there and speak words that they could understand that made sense. But the PTSD from that was absolutely intense. I remember when we were filming, this is just one of my memories along the way, when we were shooting Collapse, there were five separate shoots, and during the course of making the movie Collapse, Chris Smith, the director, vetted me thoroughly. I mean, I had to produce thousands of pages. And Chris would start asking questions about some of these times, and it triggered the worst post-traumatic. It messed me up for days because I had to go pull these files out of my file cabinet and go back and see all of the death, the murder, all the waste of good lives, all of the injustice. That was the worst part. Just the blanket, unaddressed injustice of all the people who had been screwed over trying to do the right thing. And so when I say I'm tired, I'm tired. And I feel I've done my duty for a long time, but I am not at a place right now where I feel like I can continue going. Something's got to give here somewhere. And I don't know what it's going to be or how. I can only feel it coming. I can only feel it here. I can feel its sense of urgency. And I continue to do the best job that I can do at what I understand my job to be, which is to truly hold the lantern at the crossroads. To do what we're doing, all of us and everybody at CollapseNet is just working so hard and so wonderful, and we are humming now, and we are bringing you good stuff. And I know that's working. But my job is to stay on the bridge. It's to stay on post. I'm the lookout. I'm the sentinel. And I don't think anybody else can do the analysis and the warning as well as I can, and that is a duty that I consider to be sacred. But I am giving notice to the universe right now that I don't know how much longer I can keep this up. It's too hard to watch, and it is too painful to watch the human race roll over and just allow itself to be murdered. And just allow all life to be murdered. And maybe it will be the ultimate test of whether our species or parts of our species deserves to survive or not. Maybe that ultimate litmus test will be determined by who stands up and who fights and who opposes and who doesn't. I don't know. And in the spiritual world, in a spiritual life, understanding is the booby prize. I had a friend named Don M. who used to, that was his line. Having the answers or the cosmic explanations don't matter. What matters is getting across the finish line, and what matters is learning and remembering how to be honest enough with ourselves inside our heads and in our thoughts, and to be as mature as the Finnish people have been. If you've got to see that movie. I mean, I translated the maturity that I saw in the people who were involved in building Uncle and the questions that they asked as a deep and profound love, like Gary was talking about in the last show, a deep and profound love for life. And maybe being mature is becoming love. Just a thought. I don't know. So I'm going to keep my eyes on Afghanistan very, very closely. I expect there to be strong fallout starting almost immediately. I mean, I wouldn't be surprised if there was a human wave attack on a base somewhere or something. It's a really awful situation for all the troops in Afghanistan, for the Afghani people. I am not minimizing their suffering or their loss. I just want to end it. We just want it to stop. Is there anybody out there listening to this show anywhere in the world who sees any point, who wants ISAF in Afghanistan right now? If this is what the world wants, why can we not make it happen? It's like a question that I will ask, and I'll leave you with this, and maybe somebody can come up with an answer for it next week. If in the first chapter of Genesis, if what it says there is true, that man has been given dominion over the planet and all life on it, why is it that we're the only species that has to pay to live here? Maybe we'll try and answer that next week on the Lifeboat Hour. Good night.